God bringing about this circumstance that occurred to Yosef. That we discussed in the last class, 2 weeks ago. But today I want to go through the story of what transpired between the wife of Potiphar and Yosef, and how it came that she accused him of trying to rape her, and did the master, why did she accuse him in the first place? What necessitated that? Was it because she was angry? Was it outrage? Or was it a practical kind of thing? And did her husband believe her? Yeah. What happened over there? What transpired? So let's just quickly go through the story. It says that it was after these things, that is, after all the promotions that Joseph had received, he was prominent. And Rashi points out that once he became prominent again, he began to take pains about his appearance. And so something happened. What happened? You can't control all the circumstances. What happened was that the wife of his master took a liking to him, fell in love with him. And she said, lie with me. So she starts off by being very, very uninhibited, what? Very frank, very open, right? Very bold. No shame. Then it says that he refused. He refused. He summoned up all of his energy and he refused. Alright? And then he said to the wife of his master, behold, my master does not know anything. He doesn't supervise me at all in the house. And everything that he has, he's placed in my hands. There's nobody greater than me in this house. And I'm not lacking anything except for you, which means he's, I have access to everything except for you, but that's only because you're his wife. And how can I do this terrible evil and I'll sin against God? All right, so that was Yosef's answer. Now, you have to understand that Yosef thought this over very carefully. He had to craft. He was in a difficult situation over here. The answer itself indicates a lot of wisdom. He had to work out the answer with great intelligence. Because he was stuck. He was in a difficult situation. You could ask, why didn't he go to the master? You see, Yosef did not go to the master. He didn't apprise him of the situation. He didn't do that. Why didn't he do that? Why did he not do that? That would have saved him a great deal of trouble had he gone straight to the master, but he didn't do that. Yeah? See, it would have been very... When you look back, it seems, why didn't he do this, why didn't he do that? But if you put yourself in a situation, it's not always that easy to get out of it. I mean, to get out of a situation like this. When you're the... Usually a person always associates, identifies themselves with the one who's being spurned. You know, you have an attraction with somebody else and they don't want you. But what about the person who's being... who was sought after, like Yosef in this situation. He had his own problems over here. For him, the problem is, how does he get out of it? Now, he has to do so in a way, he's very careful, he doesn't want to hurt her feelings. And we can judge whether he did the right thing or didn't, whether he handled it correctly or not. But the first thing that was extremely important was not to create a problem. He didn't want to create a problem. And to go to the master would not have been good. It would not have been good. What is he going to tell him? She's going to deny it. I'm sure she didn't do anything in an overt way. She's going to deny it. And that's going to cause a whole rift. Then he's forced to choose. He's not going to believe. He may believe, he may not believe, but he can't go against his wife. So he can't go to, he cannot go in terms of his own position, he can't go to the master and tell him that his wife, aside from the fact that it'll hurt him, he doesn't want to do that, but What's he then going to do? With what? He'll make an investigation. What is he? He was taping the conversation when she said, lie with me. He's going to risk making himself look like a fool and just cause a problem, a rift in the marriage. And that just wasn't an option. So he was forced into a situation where he had to handle it himself. It's quite possible to say that there was a temptation. It's tempting on many levels because First of all, it's the wife. You know, it's the wife of his master, and there's a certain amount of satisfaction in the fact that a person is so attractive. That you know, that he's the object of somebody's desire. It could be that she was attractive. It doesn't really say these things, but nevertheless, there is an interpretation later on. You know, the argument among the rabbis is that when he came to the house to do his work, there's one interpretation that says that on a certain level he had come there with the intention of having relations with her, but then he saw the image of his father. That's one interpretation. Anyway, he refused.
That's
how you read it. May my. It's a refusal. I would say if that's the case, though, then there must have been something that he was fighting against. There must have been some kind of an attraction. Now, so he had to frame his answer very carefully. If you look at the answer, it's a very intelligent answer. Yeah. In other words, he's not saying he doesn't want to do it. He's not turning her down. Maybe he'd been better off if he'd have turned her down directly. But he didn't reject her. There was no rejection involved. I think he was very concerned to be diplomatic not to reject her. He couldn't say that he doesn't want, that he doesn't find her attractive or appealing or anything like that. The answer seems to be saying that, of course, it's a great thing. It's a great honor. I just can't do it. He's telling her that he cannot do it. Why can't he do it? Because it would constitute a terrible injustice. It would constitute a terrible injustice to your husband, to the male. Look at everything, after everything he's done for me, and the Torah describes specifically how he brought him as a slave. Out of someone who was bought as a slave, he was working in the fields, and he raised him, he promoted him, and he put all of his confidence and all of his trust in him, and now to do a thing like this would be a terrible injustice. Then he says it would also be a sin against God. Then he throws in at the end. So I explain why that's really an even more significant reason. It's interesting why he chooses the other reason first. Yeah, the reason why he goes for the other argument is because it's true, the worst aspect of it is the fact that it's sinning against God. But that's, how many people think that way? See, most people, when they have a desire to do something, they don't look at it in terms of that God would disapprove. That they can rationalize. The fact that it's wrong because God commanded us not to do it. Yeah, but when a person has powerful desires to do something, they can rationalize that. But they can, even if they have a desire to do something, but they can identify with somebody else's pain. They don't want to hurt somebody else. That would be easier. See, he reckoned that the first thing he has to do is to find some way of breaking down her desire, breaking it down. You always have to look for the angle. Some people, when they try to dissuade others, they look for the most logical argument. The logical argument doesn't always work. The most logical argument is to sin against God. That's a much better reason. Forget about never mind the master. He's just such a person. But I don't want to sin against God. That's the more logical argument, but not the more effective one psychologically. Because that is the argument where there's going to be greater resistance. So therefore, you have to take into consideration the emotional resistance against an argument. There's less resistance, however, because she will agree. What's she going to say to that? What is she going to say to that? That there's nothing wrong with being this loyal to someone who helped you? That she has to agree. It's a terrible thing to do. So that's why he puts a tremendous amount of emphasis on that. It's like, I have no choice. What can I do? After someone, you could put yourself in that situation. He did so much for me and put all his confidence. It's impossible for me to hurt him. Now, after he said that, then he said, and in addition to sin against God. Because one, she's willing to accept the fact that maybe this thing can't work. So then he can bring in the other argument as a secondary argument. He didn't say that. But how do you see that he'd been nice to her? Right. That's true. That is true. That's very subtle. That would mean, that's extremely subtle, though. I don't know how many people would pick up on that. That depends on what level she's on. She could identify with that. In other words, he's sort of implying, and you also should realize that your husband did a great deal for you and gave you a lot of things, and you shouldn't be rebellious. But he's not saying that, because to say that openly would be critical of her. He didn't want, like, who is he? He's just a servant. Yeah. But the argument failed. Why did it fail? It's interesting. I was just thinking of a situation in today's society, which I don't know. I just associated with Yosef. Yosef's argument. So what Yosef was really saying, this would make sense in a society which does not believe that love is the ultimate good, that romantic, you know, fulfillment is the ultimate good. So the argument of Yosef makes sense. But in a society like our own, let's put the situation in contemporary terms. If this were to occur in today's society, would this be a very forceful argument? It would be very weak. Very weak. Just thinking this whole case with Woody Allen of irrelevancy. I'll explain what I mean. I'm not going into all the aspects of the situation. It seems to me pretty obvious that the activity is really wrong, morally wrong. But you forget about technicalities, that it's, technically speaking, it's an adopted daughter. This, I mean, in a psychological sense, it does seem to smack of incestuous overtones. And it's definitely morally wrong. I mean, he's an older man taking advantage of a young girl, et cetera, whatever. But what I find interesting, when he was on TV, he gave an interview, one of his first interviews, he was trying to justify his own position. You know, so he sounded very meek and very humble. But what he was trying to explain was that really, that he didn't do anything wrong in terms of his relationship with Mia Farrow. Why? Because he was saying like this. He was saying that this occurred after the relationship was over. Basically, the relationship was over, and at the end of that relationship, this is the way he put it. I mean, I remember that look on his face. Unfortunately, he was even willing to admit that unfortunately he happened to fall in love. But that explains, what can we do? That's the end of that. In other words, so what? So what if you fell in love? But if it's wrong, the fact that you fell in love doesn't make it right. So fall out of love, or don't give into it. That's so you have to deny yourself. But that ends. In other words, in his mind, and he's not a stupid person, and he was addressing himself to an audience, hoping that he'd gain it would strike a chord that people will accept and understand. What can you do? What am I supposed to do? In other words, he's saying I didn't deliberately set out to harm anybody, to harm Mia Farrow. So this, while they were still going together, he'd never done this, if you can believe that. But anyway, that's his story. Let's accept his story. So therefore, now their relationship is over. Now he still would not have had a relationship with but unfortunately, we have no control over these things. It just happened. What happened? We fell in love. Now, once you fall in love, what do you do? Right? It follows that once you fall in love, you naturally have to fulfill love, because love is the ultimate good. That's it. See, love answers everything. That answers everything. There's nothing now. Now, first you're right. What do you do? The answer, in a society, if that is the ultimate good, if that's the ultimate value, right? So then, even though what he's doing may be wrong morally, and have, what about the fact that this is harming her? That this is something terrible to do to Mia Farrow? Let's face it. I mean, whatever you want to say about her, she took this child who had no life to, wherever she would have been, an orphan. Who knows if she even would have been alive? And to take her to this country and raise her, it's like a daughter. And for her to have to witness this thing, imagine this is a terrible blow to a person. Without getting into all the particulars, I mean, this is a terrible evil. To do this to an individual, to make her succumb, just the fact that she was with this man for so many years and he's with another woman, that's a painful thing. But with this very individual who you regard now as a daughter, what Sun Yi is doing is a terrible thing to her own mother, whatever. That's a terribly evil thing to do. And for Woody Allen to subject her to this, it's one of the most painful things emotionally, on the emotional level, that you can do to an individual. So why doesn't he say, well, that it's wrong? Let's assume that it's true that they fell in love, but that doesn't make it right. It's still wrong. And if it's wrong, so then you shouldn't do it. Oh, that's the point. The point is, if the ultimate value of society is justice, the perfection of the soul, so love is an experience, an emotion. It has to be in it could be a good thing if it's in the proper framework. It could be a terrible thing. It could be a wrong thing. See? But if you're in, so therefore we have to take into consideration all of the consequences. And the consequences are that you may be satisfying your emotion, but you're doing an evil thing. How can you do an evil thing? And that's exactly what Yosef is saying. So Yosef is saying, I'm not saying that I don't like you, or that I don't find you desirable, or this wouldn't be a wonderful thing It would be a wonderful thing emotionally, but it's a terribly evil thing. And we have to live our lives in accordance with justice. And the mere fact that we're involved in this type of a romantic experience doesn't justify it. That's not the ultimate good. The ultimate good is the perfection of the soul. And to do this would, for me, would be a terrible thing. I can't do it. That's what he was saying. So that's exactly the opposite. Now, if our society had this philosophy, then Woody Allen could never have given that justification. He may have given, maybe he wouldn't have said, I don't know what he would have said. You see? But he would never, he assumed that he'd have a receptive audience. There wouldn't be a receptive audience. In an audience of Torah scholars, they would say, so what? What's the, I don't hear the answer. So what, so you fell in love. Who cares? What does that mean? That doesn't justify anything. But if, see, outside love itself justifies. It justifies everything. Well, why? That's why you have people, you know, wife swapping and breaking up homes and this and that. And, well, love. Love, you have to pursue love. That's holy. Yeah. So what happened? The argument failed. Apparently she was not at such a high level. Now what happens next? Let's take a look, let's concentrate on the Pesukim. Then it says, and it was that when she spoke to Yosef day by day, and he didn't listen to her, he wouldn't listen to her, to lie next to her, to be with her. Now what happened now? Why is the puzzle? So what happened next? Apparently, did Yosef's argument succeed or didn't it succeed? Maybe, I'm just wondering, you can't second guess, but maybe he'd been better off just telling her that he wasn't interested. See, he never said that he wasn't interested. He never said that he wasn't interested. The implication is that I could be interested, but I can't do it for a secondary reason. Now, to a person that's totally focused, totally fixated on the emotional desire, there's no rejection over here. You mean you just can't do it because, well, that I can work on. That we can work on. See, in her mind, that's how she continued to work on it. I understand. That's something else, though. Then there's no point. I know. Then the Torah doesn't have to describe how it happened. We're supposed to analyze and learn from it. No, I'm just trying to say, you're right. But then the Torah would have simply said that he wound up in jail. There's nothing for us to study.
I'm not saying that.
In other words, Yosef chose an indirect route. And he did so because of the circumstances, the diplomatic situation. But I'm not saying that that's why he, you know, failed. That had he rejected her out of hand, maybe he would have failed anyways. I don't know. But sometimes it is better to be able to see, because in this way he left the door open. Now he's saying, I'm a very hard, see, when you put yourself in the situation, what you're hearing is not a rejection. You're only focused on the emotional desire for this person. And you're not hearing, well, if this person says, I just don't like you, you're a nice person and all that, but I'm not attracted to you in that way. So then you have to give it up, because you really can't change. It's hard to change a person. If the person rejects you, I mean, it may be painful, but you accept it and go on. But when you don't hear that, you see, what is, you have to understand the effect that your words are having on the other person. The other person is not interested in justice, apparently. The other person is just interested in having a relationship. Now, they didn't hear a rejection. They heard, basically, this person would want to have one with me. Oh, it's just a question of the effect it's going to have on the master. Well, we can get around that. You see, you can keep the flame going, because, she says, well, suppose he doesn't have to find out about it. Right? He doesn't have to know about it. We can work it out. Apparently, it didn't succeed in getting the idea out of her mind. She still had the idea. Now, what changes, though? She changes her tactics. Did you notice the change in tactics over here? Before she was a bit vulgar. She was very overt, very blatant. She said, lie with me. So apparently she didn't have too much shame. But now she's saying something else. Lishkan etzla, to lie next to her. Now the Ramban explains that has a different context. Whenever the Torah is referring to actual sexual relations, it says lishkan ima, to lie with. To lie with is the euphemism for actual sexual relations. Here she says two things. Lishkan etzla, to lie next to her. Leos ima, to be with her. What do you mean to be with her? What is she suddenly, well, all of a sudden she's interested in being with him? Right? So in other words, yeah, apparently, the Mefarshim explained that what she was saying was that they could spend time together. To talk. Rashi even says, Rashi is a very strange thing. Lishka Vesla, so Rashi says, even without tashmish, even without sexual relations. Leos Ima, to be with her in the world to come.
What does it mean to be with her? That's clearly not the plain meaning of the text. She wasn't requesting, and how can you be with someone in the world to come? But apparently, yeah. Yeah, it seems the world to come means that I'm not just interested. She shifts her focus now. That she's not just interested. She realized he was a high level individual. And that if you put it in those terms, that it's purely a sexual thing, in a very vulgar kind of a way, that's it, he rejected it. So now she had to find a way. She was persistent. Did she assume she could break him down? That was her assumption at this point, that she could break him down. And persistence is a very, very strong tool. You know, because it's one thing if a person is a vayamai, he refuses. So sometimes you have a tremendous offer. It's tempting, but you realize there's something bad about it. It may be illegal or whatever. There's a temptation to get involved in it. But no, you overcome. I'm not going to do it. It's wrong. So it's one type of the power to be able to just withstand temptation that's offered to you. That's one thing. But then it's another challenge when it's constant. The constancy, the very fact that it's always in front of you, makes it more difficult. As you very well know, it's one thing if you're on a diet and you go to a wedding and there's this fantastic smorgasbord and you have all these foods and you have to resist. That's one thing. So you gather together all your strength and you walk away. Ah, you feel proud of yourself. But when the stuff, then you find out that your husband brought home a load of stuff and it's going to be in the house for the next 4 weeks staring you in the face. That's a whole different thing. And that one, see, so she was persistent. That made it a different kind of thing. And also she was very subtle. And she now suggested that they do things that are okay. Just be together. We don't have to engage in a sexual relationship. I'm not attracted to you only because of the sexual. We could be together just to be close, to talk to your company. I just want to be close to you. I want to experience your company. Now, what happens next? So now, but Joseph apparently does not agree. But now the stage is set. Now what happens next? Next, the situation, the opportunity. And it was on a certain day, and he came to the house to do his work. And there was no man from the men of the house were there in the house. So she was home alone. She was home alone, and one wonders why. I mean, there is an argument on the term to do his work. That's where the argument is. One says to do his work, meaning that he had intentions to be with her, but not conscious intentions. That's not what they mean. But rather, I guess it means to say, see, why is the Torah telling us about the fact that she kept speaking to him day in and day out? See, he perhaps he should have been more cautious, because he should have known that he had not resolved the question. Perhaps he thought he had resolved it by telling her that argument, that he couldn't do it, and that was it. But no, she persisted. She didn't. She no longer was speaking about having a sexual relationship. She was still persisting in terms of being together, but he should have been more cautious, perhaps. Now, one rabbi says that he actually did have the desire, that he came there. He should have known. In other words, according to that interpretation, he could have known. The other, Rashi says that what happened was that it was, why was there nobody there? It was some kind of a holiday, and everybody went away, I guess, to go to the celebration or whatever, the holiday. And she made up an excuse. She said that she was sick. So she had to, in other words, she contrived. She contrived, according to Rashi, she contrived to be alone with the intention of seducing Yosef. Well, whatever you want to say, either way, so what happens? Now Joseph finds himself in this dangerous situation because he's in the house, she's plotting for this very situation, and now they're alone in the house, yes? I want to understand what triggered her off. Why did she change around the whole story? Why did she frame this whole accusation? She really didn't have to do it. Was it because of the fact that she was spurned? Well, if you're going to say that she was spurned by him, and it was a case of revenge, of anger, because she was spurned, but she was spurned originally. Why was she more spurned now? She from the very, when she openly proposed to him, lie with me, he rejected it. At that point, however, it didn't cause her to get angry or to hate him or whatever. She just kept persisting. So this time he ran away? Okay. That's worse.
Why did he ran away? And then she
in the middle, you see so much attention, or you're feeding a fantasy. You know, you have a fantasy, you approach him, you reject you, it's one thing, but when you start feeding
him... No, hold a second. It's quite clear that what she really wanted was the sexual. Let's read a minute. Because when she had that opportunity, if it's as you say, that she decided to give up, that she realized that she could never convince him to be involved sexually, but rather she was content just to have an emotional relationship. So now that she had the opportunity, she shouldn't have blown it. She should have acted in a decent kind of a way and just engaged in conversation or whatever. But she didn't. Because what did she do next? It says she grabbed onto his garment. She grabbed him. She attacked him. Saying, lie with me. So she reverts back now to her original behavior in a very aggressive kind of a way. So she attacks him, physically attacks him. So what did he do? He left his garment in her hand, and he ran and went outside. The commentaries explain, it says he ran and then he went outside, meaning he ran out of the immediate chamber, but he didn't run out of the house, because he didn't want to go dashing, he didn't want to be seen running out of the house, that would draw attention. So he just ran away from the room, from the bedroom, or whatever chamber they were in, and then he got out of the house. Now why did he leave his coat there in the first place? That's what did him in. What happened over there? Well, why didn't he just take it away? He was stronger than her. He left his coat there. And it's interesting, it says when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and he had ran outside, then she called the men of the house and she said to them, look, he, meaning her husband, he brought to us a Ishivri, a Hebrew man, to make fun out of us, to disrespect us. He came to me to lie with me, and I called out in a loud voice. I screamed. So now she makes up her story. And it was when he heard that I lifted my voice and screamed, and he left his garment with me, and he ran and he went outside. So that's the first phase. First thing she does is she tells the members of the household. Of course, the question is, why did she do that? Then what did she do next? Then it says that she kept the garment with her until her master came to the house. Then she spoke to him. Now look at the way, look at the wording now. How the Torah describes. She tells the story to the people in the house. She tells the story to the husband. But is it the same story that she tells? She changes the story around. That's interesting. You would think that she would just tell the same story. And she spoke to her husband, Kadavar Me'ela, like these words. Why does the Torah say that, like these words? Saying, he came to me, the Hebrew slave came to me that you brought here to make fun out of me. Tzachek. What's tzachek mean? To make fun out of me. Right? Yes. The term l'tzachek also implies, the plain translation is to make fun, but it does imply in a sexual kind of way. Both, in other words, just to lack respect. Yes, by Yishmael it says m'tzachek, right. And it was when I raised my voice and I screamed and he left his garment with me and he ran outside. Now listen to the way the Torah describes the reaction of the husband. And it was when the master heard the words of his wife that she spoke to him saying, again, Kadavar Me'ela. Why does he have to repeat that? Like these things your servant did to me. Then he got angry. He got very angry. And then he put him in jail. The rest of the story is he put him in jail. But he didn't put him in any jail. He put him in jail for important people. It was the jail where the ministers, yes, for the VIPs. Even in those days, the commoners did not go to the same jail with the important people. Right, that's right. It was the jail with the ministers of the government officials. So it was a special kind of a jail that he sent them to. Now I have a number of questions on this. And you could add your own questions. Bottom line, I'd like to understand what caused her to now go on the attack against Yosef. Was it a case of, rejected woman, scorned. What is that? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Is this the case of hell hath no fury? Was it one of those things? Also, and if so, why did she first gather the people of the house? I mean, if her objective was to destroy Joseph, so then she simply should have waited until her husband came home. Why'd she have to bring the people of the household into the picture? What was the purpose of that? Also, why is it mentioned in 16 that she kept the garment with her? That's pretty obvious. She had the garment already. There's no point. What is the point in telling us that she kept the garment with her until her husband came home? I mean, she kept it. Well, it was the evidence. Yeah. But as far as evidence is concerned, you realize one thing. As far as evidence is concerned, she already had it. The people in the house had already seen the garment. She had already shown it to them. So if she needed witnesses, she could have just brought them in. Am I right? There must be a certain reason why she kept the garment. If you're going to say she needed it for evidence, so then she already had the whole household that seen the garment. She showed it to them. That was the first reaction. She brought the people in, she showed them the garment, she told them the story. Now when she spoke to her husband, all she had to do was, if he said, well, where's the garment, or I don't, if he was doubtful about that, then she could have called them in for witnesses.
You're implying you get certain emotional attachment to the garment?
I'm not implying anything. I'm just asking the question. I never thought of that, but that's interesting. You come up with these interesting ideas. That's interesting. It's a very deep insight. Psychology here. What else? The third question I want to resolve is: did the husband believe her or not? See, the Torah goes to great lengths. I'll give everybody a chance. I see this is an interesting subject. The Torah goes to. Now, did the husband believe his wife or not? This becomes a very difficult thing to resolve, because you see that the husband had a very close relationship with Joseph. That's why I told you to read the introductory sentences. It says that he saw that God was with him and he was successful, and that from the time that he first came in, he had increased his wealth and he kept promoting him. And go back to verse 4. It says that Joseph found favor in his eyes. Now, finding favor in his eyes is different than just being recognized. It means he liked him. He had a personal relationship with Joseph. So, my question is, he threw him in jail. Did the husband believe the wife or not?
No.
Now, it's not so clear, because if you're going to say that he believed her, what does it mean that he got angry? You have to explain that to me, too. It says that he got angry, which would indicate angry at Joseph, I suppose. So if he got angry, and then he throws him in jail. Okay, that's the other side of the coin. I mean, it's not that clear cut. If you're going to tell me that he did not believe her, then why did he get angry if he didn't believe her? And why did he throw him in jail? That's not just to throw him in jail. On the other hand, if you're going to say that he did believe her, so Malki's question is, then why did he let him get off so easily? One would have imagined in Egypt at that time would have killed him, because that's a terrible thing to do for anyone, certainly for a Hebrew. He's a foreigner, he's a Hebrew. They looked down upon the Hebrews, and he was a working for him, he was a slave, and he has the gall, the chutzpah, to try and attack his wife. One could imagine that a person would get killed for things like that, for less than that. Remember, I made a point when it says that she spoke to her husband saying, like these things, right?
Yeah.
You have that in your translation, Kadavar Mela, right? The Torah used the word which is not used when she talks to the people of the house. Then she just says directly, what happened? I was in the room, he came, he said he wanted to lie with me, and I screamed, and he left his garment. In telling it to the husband, it uses both, two times, saying like these things. And then it says that when he heard what his wife said, like these things. Now Rashi says something which is wild, very, very wild. Rashi says that when did she tell to them? When they were in bed together, when they were having relations. And she pointed out to him what things? like these things. In other words, like these things that we're doing now, those are the kind of things that he did to me, or tried to do to me, something like that. That's what Rashi said. Well, the Ramban says that doesn't make sense. That why would she, by saying that, by telling the husband, by implying that they actually did things together, even if she did it against her will, that would be casting aspersions upon herself. That would be bad for her case, because then he'd be angry at her. First of all, it's bad. Even if she was forced, she didn't have to admit that he actually did anything to her. Why? Even if she was forced and was against her will, it's going to cause the husband to have less respect for her, because she's admitting that they had some kind of relationship. But moreover, he would get angry. He'd get angry at her and say, why didn't you scream? Why didn't you fight? Why'd you let him? So the Ramban is saying that's not what it means. There's an argument between the Ramban and Rashi. And the Ramban seems to raise very good questions on Rashi, to say it's so far-fetched, it would be counter to her own purposes. Her own purpose is to show that she's extremely virtuous and a righteous woman, and he's a low-level individual, and she was subjected to an attack. Now, why would she want to impugn her own character, to weaken her own case by actually implying what they did things together? But nevertheless, that's how Rashi learns. Rashi learns that she saw that she mentioned these things that we're doing now, to get her husband angry. I'd like to see if we can resolve Rashi. The question is really on Rashi. The Ramban makes, certainly that's not the plain meaning. You see, again, here's a clear-cut case where you have to distinguish between the plain meaning of the verse is not to say that she told him like these things. In other words, that she waited until they were actually having relations together and described what happened. That's not the plain meaning. Rashi is saying something deeper over here. We have to try and work it out. All right, now I'm going to let Malcolm. The Ramban explains it as follows, that what happened was that she attacked him, so to speak, and she grabbed onto the garment. Now, of course, in retrospect, again, that was a big mistake. Had he managed to get the garment and leave, she would not have had a case. That would have, because what could she say? It would have just been, she'd just make up a story with nothing to back it up. Now the Ramban says, it's very interesting, so you wonder why, I mean, Yosef is a very intelligent individual, he's very resourceful, why didn't he grab the garment? Unless you could say he was just, shocked, or he was concerned, he didn't want to take any chances and spend a minute longer. I mean, if you're going to say that he himself had to protect himself against any temptation that he might have had, then his only concern was to get out of there. You could say that. You could say at that point Yosef had to save his life, because that would have been to have relations with her would have been a terrible sin. I mean, from sin. I had to save a soul from sin. The Ramban says that he couldn't do that. They were involved in a struggle. Like, she was, literally, you have to imagine it that way, like she was grabbing the garment, and he was trying to get away. Yeah, now in order to take it away, he would have had to use force against her, and he couldn't do that because she was still the mistress of the house, because out of respect for her position and who she was, he couldn't do that. See, he didn't know at this point that she's going to take the garment and going to hatch an accusation against him. So, in order for him to have the garment, of course he wanted the garment, but he realized that it's a fight, so he's going to have to, pull it out of her hand, and that would be disrespectful. So what he did was, he just left, what the Ramban says was, he took the garment off. It was an outer garment. I guess like we would, the equivalent of a jacket. It wasn't an undergarment, it was an outer garment that you would wear, and what he did was, since he couldn't, she had grabbed onto it, and he'd have to be disrespectful to pull it away, he just removed it. That's what the Ramban says. Not that she pulled it away from him, because how could she pull it away if he's wearing it? You can't pull somebody's jacket off if they're wearing it. So he just took it off, like he took off the jacket, and left it there and ran. Now, the Sforno says, the next step is when she saw, what does it say? It doesn't say that she immediately called. When she saw that he had left the garment in her hand and ran outside, so what was she afraid of? She was now afraid that he's going to run away, and now he's going to inform. A preemptive strike. That's what this partner wants to say. You see, that her immediate reaction was to protect herself. To protect herself, she was afraid that he would now go ahead and tell the truth, that she has this attraction for him, that she tried to seduce him and so forth. and she now took steps to protect herself. So what did she do? She gathered all of the people of the household, and look how she plays upon their emotions. She realized, obviously, that there must have been a lot of envy for Yosef in the household, because, let's face it, he's a foreigner. He's a young kid, he's a foreigner. He's got all the elements that would cause people to dislike him, and he's been promoted to the top. He's the closest one to the master. So there's no question at all that they are going to be jealous of him. She played upon all those emotions. And look how she's very skillful. Because what does she say? Us. See, in this discussion, the focus is us. We're all in this together. And again, she is turning them against the husband. The husband is always the object of the blame over here. And what she's saying is, hey, the Lano. See, I'm together with you. It's always nice with the servants to always put yourself on that level. We're all together, you know. I'm sure until this time they didn't have too much to do with her. But suddenly it's us. We're all in this together. And Ishivri, to make fun out of us. What he's doing is disrespectful to all of us. And then she says, see, that's the preamble. He brought a Hebrew man, to make fun out of us. So what happened to me is really a sign of his contempt for all of us. He has no respect for this country at all. Then she said, he came to me to lie with me, and I called out in a loud voice, and when he heard that I raised my voice, he left the garment here, and he ran outside. Now, the only question I have with this point of, if that is the case, at this stage of the game, she could have stopped the whole thing. Joseph was still safe. Because, according to this point, she did this in order to protect herself, to establish her own alibi, in case Joseph would accuse her. So now it was all secured. So why did she have to go any further? There was no need to go any further. She now had her story. If Joseph would go ahead and have the chutzpah to snitch on her, then she'd gather the household together, and they would say, no, it's not true. He came on to her. She was safe. But that wasn't enough.
If all the servants knew about it, obviously the master...
The servants are not going to accuse her.
But then supposing he hears about it from the servants...
That what? That Joseph tried to?
Well, then his wife, why didn't you tell me? What are you trying to hide?
Well, no, I don't...
I hear there's a rumor going around that Joseph tried to attack you. You know, I'm talking about these people.
Well, it's possible. It's possible. Yeah, it's possible, but then I don't think that's the case. You're right. You have a point. But that wouldn't have been such a terrible thing. She could have defended against something like that. She could have said, well, look, the matter was taken care of. He's not a threat anymore. And I don't want to disrupt. I understand how important he is to you. He's still a good worker. I mean, she could have gotten out of that. She goes after Yosef now with a vengeance. What she does next is to destroy Joseph. Now, I would say that's the chat. She kept the garment. That's a very good point that Barbara mentioned before. Why does Barbara tell us that she kept the garment with her? What does that mean? But something happened between the time she spoke to the household and the time her husband came home. Then she started to cook. See, her first reaction, I would go along with the Sephorno. The immediate reaction was to defend herself. I mean, you don't stop and think. But then it began to come home to her? What should have come through all along, that she's been rejected. See, it's different. What happened before wasn't truly a rejection. What happened before was, he wasn't saying, I'm rejecting you. It's an impossibility. An impossibility is not a rejection. But now that her passion had grown, see, the passion grows with time. She didn't work on the emotion to overcome it. She kept feeding the passion. Then in the strongest moments of passion, she had a certain fantasy. The fantasy of having Yosef. So she followed her emotion. Now when she followed that emotion, and he actually ran away, that was a rejection. Then all of that emotion was suddenly converted. All that love and all that desire was now converted into hatred.
Okay,
it's very similar to the case, you know, the case of Amnon and Tamar and Tanakh?
Right.
Where Amnon was after Tamar, and then afterwards it says that as much as he had loved her before, that's how much he hated her. There was a little bit different, because there was disgust with himself was now projecting onto her. Okay. Her next thing was, see, now all of that emotion of love, she's been rejected. And it's one thing to be rejected is painful enough. But here's the case where she's the mistress, and this person's just an ordinary, who is he? Just an ordinary servant. He should have been delighted. He should have been thrilled that she was even interested. It's the worst type of a rebuff. The worst type of a rejection that a person could suffer. So now, she couldn't tolerate the idea. I don't think she went after Yosef now for practical reasons. In terms of practicality, she had defended herself. All she needed was the first thing she had done was to get the household behind her in case Yosef will go after her so she could protect herself. I don't think that there was a need in terms of practicality, but this was an emotional thing. Now she's seething with anger because she can't tolerate the rejection. And as long as Yosef returns, if he'll return to his position and everything will be normal, so every minute of every day will be a reminder of the fact that she's been rejected. She couldn't tolerate that. So she had to use, but even here required skill. What was the problem that she confronted over here? Exactly. She knew about the closeness between her husband and Joseph, and how important Joseph was. She knew all of this. Joseph taught him. He had a tremendous respect, a tremendous regard. And what she was going to say would be completely against everything that he had believed in. It's not so simple. And he's not a stupid person. Because he's been very deliberate. That's why the Torah describes step by step how Joseph had worked his way up. And he recognized Joseph to the extent where he placed all of his confidence. Where he placed all of his confidence in Joseph. That means that he regarded him as being a just individual who would never betray him in any way. So she had to use her... That's why I think it says... See, she used a different approach with her husband. Kadvar me'ela means that she didn't just, with regard to the household, she just gave a simple version of the story. This is what occurred. And that's why she kept the garment. See, it was an attempt to play upon his emotions. And what's the whole essence of the thing? What's the whole essence of the thing over here? She's angry. See, I agree with the one who said before that she's angry. A lot of the anger is directed really at her husband. I mean, you can read into it on a lot of different levels. There's a lot of anger which is directed against the husband. It could be. I mean, let's face it. We could assume it wasn't just the case that Joseph was so handsome. She must have been a frustrated woman. And there were problems in the relationship. And she had a lot of anger against her husband. Now, all of that anger, see, all of the anger is being directed towards the husband. The husband becomes the focal point. In other words, you're a fool. She attacked him for being a fool. What did you do? How can you do a stupid thing like this? How can you take a person who's a total stranger? First of all, he's a Hebrew. And everybody knows that the Hebrews are no good, because all of Egypt looked down upon the Hebrews. And he's a slave. And what did you do? You were overcome by your emotions. You didn't care about me, because... The whole thing that this person did was to make fun out of me, to humiliate me. What about my humiliation? Yeah, I'm going to get to that in a second. See, Asher Heves Olanu, you brought this... She's really... That's really what bothered her, that she... The humiliation. Except she's not expressing the true humiliation. She's expressing what really bothered her was the fact that she had been humiliated. For her to come on to Joseph and him to just run off was humiliation for her. Rejection, humiliation. And that's what she's complaining about. But she's not telling the husband what the real humiliation is, but she is expressing a true feeling. Her true feeling is humiliation, and that's what's coming out. Except she's attaching it to something else. She's changing. It's inverted. It's coming out the other way. In other words, humiliated me by trying to seduce a hot, a woman like me. Now, I would say that perhaps that's what Rashi means with regard to the factor of Tashmish. That it was at the time when they were having relations. Rashi doesn't mean literally. But it could be that, you see, she, Kadvar Me'ela, liked these words. She didn't just tell the story. She worked on the husband. She didn't just tell him like... With the other people of the household, she summoned them, she told them the story, she showed them the garment, and she dismissed them. With the husband, it was a completely different thing. She worked them over. She kept repeating it. She played upon all the various emotions that were involved. As a slave, you made a mistake, it was stupid, humiliation, you didn't consider all these things. And even Rashi is saying, apparently, that she would revert to the topic even when they were together, to get him angry. To infuriate him. And I guess perhaps implying, well, I don't know how or what exactly she said, but implying that things about the husband, you know, that that would infuriate him. Criticizing. It was all, her whole methodology was criticizing the husband. And that, now the thing is like this, did he believe her or didn't he believe her? It's interesting. I would say that he got angry. She was able to get him angry. She succeeded in getting him angry. Yes. It is, by the way, you have, the Sforno says out now that the anger was at her. That he was angry at her, but he had no choice. He had no choice. He couldn't go against her. He couldn't defend Yosef. I don't believe it. I believe that he was angry at Joseph, that she was able to get him angry, but then when he thought it over, he was in a state of conflict. In my opinion, the behavior that he exhibited shows that he was in a state of conflict. One thing it strikes me as missing from the whole story. If he was really angry at Yosef, forget about the fact that he should have killed him or whatever, he never confronts Yosef. No, a slave, but he had promoted him. He now had complete control over everything. He didn't demote him. Yeah, he didn't demote him, but he never knew. The point is, what was Yosef saying? Yosef was saying, how could I do this terrible evil after this man has done so much for me? Now, at the end of the story, if the master really believed, shouldn't he have summoned Yosef and chewed him out? And told him, how can you do a thing like this to me? If he really believed, first of all, where's the interrogation of Joseph? That's missing from the story. Not even to interrogate him, to call him in. The next thing should be, you should summon Joseph. And the master summoned Joseph and spoke to him and asked him, why didn't he even ask Joseph his? Why didn't he ask Joseph his version of the story? What happened? Huh? I'll tell you why she kept the garment with her. The garment planted seeds of doubt in his mind. That's why it says she kept the garment. The garment, she understood that it would not be easy to change, right? But nevertheless, there's questions over here. It's never that clear cut. Believe me, whenever on Sunday morning, I should discuss the idea of respect and suspect. Whenever above suspecting, no matter how much you respect someone, take the person that you respect the most in this world. I guarantee you, with someone who's clever at these things, can plant seeds of suspect. I can get you to suspect that person. I mean, given certain circumstances, given a garment, you see, given some evidence, and you begin to wonder, is it possible? You hear stories all the time, and you say, "Dad, this person, I know this person, could never do it." Really? And then, but how do you account for this thing? How do you account for that thing? In your own mind, you'll still say, "I can't accept it," but have we succeeded in planting some seeds of doubt? Now, in my opinion, you could say, like Ronit wants to say, that he absolutely had no doubt whatsoever. But then again, if he was totally convinced that Joseph was innocent, then what he did was very unjust. Then this is completely unjust to take a person and throw him into jail. And even if it wasn't the worst jail in the world, it's still in jail, and he's there, basically looks like he's there for life. Unless he had that, you know, that incident where he interpreted the dreams, and then powered him, he would have been there forever. So then you're saying Potiphar is a very low level individual, and there's no interrogation. In my opinion, I think she did succeed. I think that what Rashi is indicating, she kept the garment with her. The garment is very important, and she did go so far like these things. It's not just an abstract story. You know, she realized, you just make up an abstract, there's no garment, there's no evidence, it's just an abstract story, why should I believe you? Then perhaps Potiphar would have not gone along with what, he would have made some change, okay, you're worried, but this will put him, will demote him, like you said, would have given him a demotion. I think he was in a tremendous state of conflict over here. And that is, she had planted seeds of doubt, and yet he didn't want to confront Joseph. because it just completely went against everything he knew about Joseph. So he was not man enough. He was not a great enough individual to search for the truth. A greater individual would have searched. I have to get to the bottom of this, because if what she's saying is true, then it turns out that Joseph is the biggest fraud and disloyal and treacherous, and the man should be killed. On the other hand, well, there's not that much evidence. At least there's always a trial. You have an interrogation. That's the case. On the other hand, if it's false, these things can happen. Look, we all know very well the fact that you have a garment. He could have taken off his garment. The misunderstanding, you know, enough situations today. There's so many cases. This case with Amy Fisher, whatever. There's 20 different versions. Again, the fact that she has a garment isn't proof. The other way, it plants a seed of doubt, but it's not proof. Many things could have happened. They could have been in the same room. He could have taken off the garment. That doesn't. You can't condemn a person to death on the basis of a garment. You got to give a man. But he escaped from the whole thing. You see, he gave in to the pressure of his wife. On the other hand, he had too much regard for Joseph, so he tried to just remove himself from the situation, and he put him in jail. He put him in jail, and that was his concept of resolving it. But he did not have the ability to search the matter through and go for the actual truth. And go for the truth. The full truth. If the truth is that the man is innocent, he's got to oppose his wife. And find out, why are you making up the story? Whatever the case may be, and you have to follow it through. There's no justification for the way he handled it. On the other hand, if Joseph, he doesn't have the guts. He does not have the guts to see the matter through to the truth. That's my opinion. Because you can't just leave it the way it is. But Yicharapo, he got angry. I say, not like on it, although you could learn that way, I say he was angry. Because now he can't look at Joseph and say, maybe Joseph did something wrong. On the other hand, you can't decide a case on the basis of anger. The next step is to make an larger investigation. Did he speak to the people of the household? Doesn't say he spoke to them. Did he speak to Joseph? Give a man a chance to defend himself. What happened? No. You see, he understands the complexities, the difficulties. He can't face Joseph. He can't face her. So he chooses the most convenient kind of a solution. He doesn't destroy Joseph, at least by killing him. He can't stand up to his wife, so he puts him in jail. That's that's I think what took place over here. But of course, the ultimate purpose of God was that Joseph should be in jail and should have an opportunity to further work on his own perfection, as we explained last time. Okay, we'll stop here.